It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Phileas Club. We're in August 2017, and this is episode 92. It's a special about India. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Phileas Club. This is a show where we get people from different countries in the world to get together and talk about what's been happening in the world and in their local, well, places, countries, cities, every month or so. And every so often, now almost every month, I think, we do a special episode on top of the regular one. And we dive a little bit deeper into one area, one topic. I try to do them about one country as much as I can, but sometimes we'll talk about another thing. And for example, last time we talked about healthcare quite extensively, and that I think was especially interesting in the context of today's what's happening in the recent weeks and months. But today we're going to be talking about something a little bit closer to the source of this series, and that's going to be thanks to the co-host for the show today, Mayank Maheshwari. I'm hoping I'm not butchering your name too much. How are you doing?
Oh, no, I'm quite well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very happy to have you on. Some people might have heard the tiny accent in your voice and realize that you're from India, and also the show is probably have a title that is related to India, so they figured out that you are going to be talking about India today. And we've been talking about doing the show for a while now, so I'm really glad that we can finally get together and talk about that. So first, I guess, could you tell the audience a little bit about yourself? You're currently residing in the US, but, you know, tell where you come from, what you've been through, maybe to give them an idea of who you are and where you're coming from.
Like you said, my name is Mayank. I am from India. Currently, I live in the US. I grew up there, and like a lot of other Indians, I came here to study and just stayed for work. And yeah, I grew up in the 80s and 90s during what we can call the economic liberalization of India. And yeah, those were some interesting times. Quite it's fun.
The way you say it, I'm sure, is gonna is carries a lot of meaning. Yeah. So I want to dive, I think, first into what it was like for you growing up in India. Just to be clear, you spent about 20 years living in India, and then you moved to the US to study. And at that point, you stayed in the US, but your whole family is in India and you go there fairly often. So would you consider yourself, I guess that can be an interesting first question. Do you consider yourself Indian? Or I don't know if you have the U.S. Citizenship
No, I don't. I am still an Indian citizen. Currently, I work in the U.S. on a work visa.
Okay, so you consider yourself Indian?
Yes, I consider myself very Indian.
Very Indian. Okay, cool. Yeah. All right. So 1982, you're born in Delhi, so the capital of India. I think another thing I want to ask you about for the listeners who might not know, which I'm sneakily including myself into, India is obviously gigantic. It's 1.2 billion people, currently Indian citizens. And is it a country or is it like a continent? It's a federation, first of all. But, you know, the U.S. is a federation, the EU is a union, and we have like a third or fourth of the population there. Is it a country? Is it unity? Is there unity? Is it how does it work to even call India a country when there's so many people over such a large geographical area?
Yeah, that is something that is a very that is a very loaded, not loaded, but it is a very good question, and it is you know, different people have different views on it, but certainly there is a reason the British called it the subcontinent, because it is almost I mean, I was reading some statistics, and if you take the landmass of the European Union, the countries in the European Union, India is about 3/4 of that, if I remember correctly. I mean, statistics can be wrong on Wikipedia, but
yeah.
And culturally as well, India is extremely diverse. The way I like to think of it is, India is what the European Union could be with a little more, you know, with a little more
cooperation.
Sort
maybe?
Of no, I would certainly not say cooperation, but a little more. I mean, we were kind of forced into it by Britain, you know, by the colonization of India, because for most of its history, India has been, you know, unless like you have a ruler like Ashoka, or, you know, so some of the Mughal emperors, India has been, you know, separate kingdoms, and so it is sort of like Europe. I mean, Europe chose to unify voluntarily. We were kind of, you know, grouped in, we were kind of forced into it, and that, I mean, and after independence, we just decided that's pretty good.
Would you say we'll
keep going?
Would you say there is a feeling of unity, even though that unity was forced upon you by the British Empire? Would you say now Indians feel like they're all part of India and they have things in common, even though they have a lot of different cultures?
I like to think so, certainly. And yeah, cultural differences are pronounced, and there is a lot of identity-based politics, culture-based politics, because the states of India are divided along the linguistic and sort of cultural lines.
Right.
And so that provides a lot of sort of not individual, but state level, freedom and sort of identity. But at the same time, yeah, I like to think that that Indians do feel unified as a whole, as Indians.
All right. So in that context, let's talk about things a little bit more from a personal scale. And so you're born 1982 in Delhi, the capital of India, as we mentioned, and you grow up in Delhi. How would you describe your, the atmosphere of your everyday life to someone who doesn't know India, who doesn't know anything about Delhi, especially, I'm guessing, from that time, it was a very different place than it is today. How would you describe daily life to someone who doesn't know it?
I think one of the big things I would like to say is, people used to have this image of like India just being this, you know, this sort of backward place, you know, with poor people just, you know, lying on the streets or whatnot. But in reality, it is a fairly normal. I grew up in a fairly normal, fairly normal home. It was, I mean, I don't know what to describe it, except it was normal for me. You know, I went to school, I came home, I did my homework and whatnot. But
So let me ask you about the details. You mentioned when we were preparing the show that your family was middle class, so not extremely rich, not poor either. So again, with that context, the streets of Delhi, do you have... I'm going to ask a lot of questions that are going to sound really dumb, and that's probably because I am really dumb, but at least, you know, we can get the answers. But... you have paved roads, you have electricity, you have apartment buildings and, you know, public transportation, these kinds of things. Because you're right, when we think about India, especially when we let our imagination run wild about what it was or what it, what it could have been in the 80s, I'm sure more than one person has that image of movie India, which is, as you said, beggars in the street and lots of people in rags and people pushing their carts full of fruit, some of them have being rotten, and markets with lots of spices and incredible colors. But overall, like a significantly, like a poor environment.
Definitely. I mean, that image, I shouldn't say that is untrue. That image certainly is there, but then there is also an India that is very well off, that is quite rich, and you know there are certainly extremes, and I sort of grew up in the middle. The image you describe is actually kind of true for me because I grew up in the old Delhi. The old Delhi is where which was the seat of power for the Mughal emperors, and you know the old capital before the British made the capital in Calcutta, and then they moved it in 1908, 1908 or 1911, something like that, and they moved it to Delhi and created New Delhi, which was designed by Sir, I don't know if he was a knighted or not, but Lutyens. And so I grew up in Old Delhi, and certainly the area that I grew up in was like that, but not all of Delhi is like that. So I guess that is what I was trying to say. Like, there are many different, views you can have.
But that image, so are you saying that image, that caricature image that we have, exists? It's just not everywhere is like that. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. So the stereotype is kind of true, but only in a limited way.
Hmm. All right. So what was your daily life, in Delhi, in old Delhi? Get up, go to school. How was school? Did you go by public transportation? Like, can you describe quickly? That's something I like to do. An average day for a junior high school or high school student in India back in those days.
So I went to a public school. What we call a public school in India, it is actually a private school. So government schools, the public schools, what are called public schools in US are called government schools in India because they are run by government agencies, and the private schools are called public schools. So I went to a public school, and as opposed to the US, I don't know about France or Finland, but in US private schools are really expensive. I mean, you have to really shell out some money. But in India, public schools, while they are expensive, they are a lot more affordable. So a lot of middle class people send their kids to public schools,
and which again are private schools. Significantly better than government schools.
Some government schools are good, but obviously due to the due to the inefficiencies or corruption or just whatever you want to call it, public schools do offer significant improvement over government schools. Mm.
You mentioned maybe we can get back to that afterwards. So you wake up, have breakfast with your family, I guess, then...
No, I had to wake up pretty early. Different schools can decide, you know, what time they start. My school started at 8, so I had to get up 6:15, 6:30, get ready, because my school bus came around 7:20, and it took about 40 minutes for me to get to school by that route.
Okay.
And so in India, public schools can they are not limited to a certain area. They can service. Anyone can get admission as long as they
pay
can
for it,
yeah. As long as they pay for it and they can get to the school. And and a lot of schools will run their own transportation around the city, and if you so like my school, we contracted buses from the Delhi Transportation Corporation, DTC, the government run company that ran the buses in Delhi, and they had the buses contracted, and these buses in the morning and in the afternoon would run around Delhi, and they had designated routes, and we had about 20 or 22 or such buses, and I remember taking bus number 8 and it had a designated route. It would pick up kids from each stop and it'll take us to the school. You get off, you know, go do our thing.
Again, a stupid question. Did you have like roads, or was it like dirt roads, or was it like a quote unquote proper city? I understand this is a very dumb, but I'm trying to imagine you getting on a bus going through the city. And I don't know if the image should be full of dust flying everywhere, or like, you know, a city with pavement and sidewalks.
No, definitely there is pavement, sidewalk, roads. The only problem with Delhi is they don't maintain it very well. So the roads are fine. It's a normal road. Sure, it'll have a few more potholes than your standard American road, but still we have paved roads, we have pavement. Everything that you would expect. I would say the only sharp contrast is between old Delhi and the rest of Delhi, because the old Delhi is much more crowded, and the traffic, while it is bad in the rest of Delhi, it is especially worse in the old areas, because of the lack of planning. It's an old city, so it's not as planned,
right?
So it is well, I would say goes from bad to worse. So we have roads, we have everything, just the traffic is so bad that it takes forever.
And you mentioned that the landmass is roughly, let's say, on the same scale as it is for Europe or the US, but you do have 3 to 4 more people on that same landmass. Does that translate into a super crowded city, like impossibly crowded, or is it not that much?
Definitely. The national capital region of India, which includes Delhi and some of the cities of neighboring states, so that's called the national capital region. I don't remember the exact numbers, but last time I checked, it was 19, maybe 20 million people. So it is definitely crowded. The place where I grew up, Old Delhi, the only time I ever saw the street completely clean, or the sidewalks, like everything was gone away from the sidewalks, was the Republic Day parade. It used like they had a route which took the armed forces and all that through the main thoroughfare of Old Delhi, And the night before that was the only time I could go out and say, wow, this is, there are no people. Right. Because, yeah, they would come and, you know, clean it and sort of, you know, make it look a little more presentable. But now that that route has changed, I think it has been over a decade now. Right. Yeah, nothing like that ever happens anymore. So yeah, it's people and more people.
So you go to school. You spend the day at school. Do you enjoy school? Do you what language do you study in? Again, dumb question. But do you like living there and going to school and all of that?
Yeah, I remember liking. I mean, of course, you know, you tend to remember things more fondly, but I do remember liking my school, my classmates and everything. And it was, my school was a little less strict than most of the other schools in India.
Yeah, can you define that? Like, how strict are schools in India and how strict was yours?
Yeah, so most schools in India have a dress code. You have to purchase pants of a certain color, or you know, skirt of a certain color, shirt, and you would have
basically.
Basically, it is a uniform. You have to buy it from the school, or get a compatible one made yourself if you want to do that. And you have to have a tie, and in the winter you would wear a coat. Or a sweater, which is in the school colors. And my school was kind of lenient in that we didn't have a tie. So you're like, yes, no tie.
So no tie because, equals party, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you could. And there were also certain more sort of laxities in like the shoes. They had to be black. They didn't have to be like leather sort of dress shoes. They could be black and sport shoes.
So you could wear sneakers.
Yeah, as long as they were black.
Nice.
And with like no obvious, you know, logo or whatever. I mean, they could be, as long as they were black, they were fine. Okay. And so in these ways, like it was nice. We didn't have to wish our teachers good morning or good evening or good afternoon. Like a lot of schools in India, they have this strict like if you see a teacher go by, you say good morning sir, good morning ma'am. But in my school it was we didn't have to say that. We were told to just wave our hand, that is it. Basically you are acknowledging your teacher and saying hello or whatever,
but so, it didn't have to so be that, good morning.
Yeah, it was again so little less strict. And another thing I remember very fondly was our school didn't allow corporal punishment. Basically, like teachers were not allowed to hit the students or, in some schools, you know, it is still, it is still allowed. I don't know. I can't say what the current state is, but back in my day, corporal punishment was still not out of the question for a lot of students. But in my school, except for one or two teachers who were just super hard on students, they would sometimes, like if a student was really, you know, getting out of hand, they would just make them stand on a chair or something. I mean, but yeah, in general, it was not allowed.
Okay, so it's not like they got the whip out. It's like, the ruler, you know, to hit the fingers or something like that.
Yeah, my school was lucky on that in that regard.
But it would happen elsewhere in other schools. Okay, I see. All right, so you spend the day in school. What do you do afterwards? Like, what did kids do after school in the, let's say, late 80s, early 90s in India? Or at least in Delhi?
For me, the school got over at 2. So after that, the bus again we would all climb into our buses and go back. And usually the evening traffic was worse. So we would I would reach home by 3. I would get off at my stop like 2:40, walk about 20 minutes to home. And at that point, I was usually so tired, especially, not so tired from school, but just from walking back in the afternoon sun. You know, during summer, it is very hot, especially in the north. And the crowd and everything, I would just get so tired. I would just flop down, rest for a little bit. And then my mom would just call me for lunch, for, I guess, second lunch.
Second lunch?
Yeah.
I guess you had lunch at school, right?
Yeah, exactly. So lunch would happen around like 11 or 11:30 in school. By the time I get home, you know, I would say, okay, have lunch. And I would eat again then.
So is that common? Like, is that what every kid does? Like, you have a second lunch?
Well, for me, it was, for most of my classmates, friends, it was pretty common. So, I mean, I would say, yeah, but I don't know how. I mean, there's so much flexibility in the school schedule. I imagine there were a lot of kids who didn't do that. But for me, it was pretty much the schedule. For my brother as well, and for most of my classmates, it was the same thing.
Again, stupid question alert. What did you eat? Was it like curry type things that we called curry, and rice with your hands, or what did you eat and what did you use to eat?
Oh, that is I completely understand the question. And yeah, in eating in India, we do eat with our hands. It is very common, very natural. But we do have spoons and forks and knives and whatnot. That is not like something you wouldn't. That is not something that is out of place in a household. So basically, what we would have is what my mom would usually make is we would have sort of a lentil curry or a curry made out of like different squashes or other vegetables. And daily food in India is not as rich, obviously, as the restaurants. You know, you don't have a lot of cream-based stuff. That is more of a special occasion food or a sort of a party food. But yeah, usually it would just be a curry made out of like either any type of lentil or vegetables or squashes or whatever. And my mom would usually also make a sort of a dry curry. And similarly, it could be made out of vegetables or potatoes. And she would make, and this is very common in India, at least in the north, she would make either rice or, which is in the north, it is basmati rice. In the south, it is, I don't remember the name. Indian
no
cuisine
one needs
is
to remember written. What, you know, the other type of rice. Basmati is the way to go.
Yeah, for the north, yes, we love our basmati rice.
Let's be a little bit, you know, a little bit obnoxious here. I think basmati is the way to go, period. Except if you're eating Japanese food, in that case, of course, Japanese sticky rice, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
Sorry,
nothing else.
No. Keep going, but
and depending on like what your family food preferences are. In my family, yogurt. Was made fresh daily or every other day in home, and we would eat that along with our meal. Like we would have these little small bowls and some curry in the bowl and some of the dry like curry potatoes or curried vegetables on the side in the plate, a little bowl with yogurt and either rice or she would make what we call in India. We have many names depending on the region. You call them chapatis or roti or fulka. It is another name. It is basically an unleavened bread, which is made into a tortilla sort of.
Right.
That is the best way I can describe.
Okay.
So we would have that. I would eat that. You know, go watch some afternoon TV. There would be like some soap opera going on, and. But
Indian soap. Oh, no, go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't do the food thing completely. So, we would eat with our hands, but that is often like, so we would take our tortilla, break it off, scoop some curry with it, and just eat it. And you can eat rice with your hands too. That is not a problem. I know how to do that. But it is much easier to just use a spoon.
Okay.
So, but again, it differs in region to region. In southern India and eastern part of India, where they eat, it is very common to eat rice with hands, and they know how to do it well without getting your hands completely, you know, dirty.
Okay.
So it is very common. But yeah, spoons, forks, knives, all that is very standard. Cutlery,
right. People
or
wouldn't look at you funny if you were using cutlery in
no.
the house.
So did
you live in an apartment, like in a building part of, or was it a house?
For me, it was a house.
Okay.
I grew up in Old Delhi, and my house I grew up in was a multi-level home.
Right.
And I guess the closest approximation I give is, I can give is, you know, how the old parts of like Spain, or I don't know, I think France will have that as well. Like the streets are very narrow, and you have
right.
houses which are just stuck with each other. Mm. Like there's no gap. They are built alongside each other, and they are, you know, multi-level homes.
Okay.
So that is the best approximation I can give. The home I grew up in, I sort of had a less common home compared to my classmates. My home was, well, it is still standing. It is over 100 and I guess 70 years old by now.
Wow.
The analogy with like old homes in old Europe, that kind of works here.
Okay.
And yeah, it was built by my grandfather's great grandfather or something like that. We have a family tree.
Oh, so it's a family home, like, and
yeah.
It's been so for generations. And so you were saying your mom would make the food, and it's not just like, I guess she would make the yogurt as well, which that
yeah.
sort of got caught my attention. Like she would actually make the things. Like, do you go, I'm jumping from question to question, but
sure.
do you go to the store and buy pre-packaged food at that time in Delhi, or do you have to buy the raw ingredients and then prepare stuff?
No, you bought the raw ingredients. Everything was fresh, or as fresh as it could be. Packaged food, like even frozen peas and all that, that was, when I was growing up, especially when I was very young, I couldn't have imagined frozen peas.
Oh, really?
I remember like seeing and trying frozen peas in like late 90s, and I was like, this is not good. This is because in India, when I was growing up, and I'm sure it was true for most other kids, you like every day or every other day, like either your mom or your dad or someone or maybe a servant went out and you would have a lot of small farm owners. They're
okay.
not small by stature.
It's not that the farmers were small, but their farms were small.
Yeah, they would bring their they would bring their food for sale.
So
food consumption was based a lot on what was seasonally available. So in the winter we would get peas and carrots and whatnot, and in the summer it would be a lot more squashes and other vegetables but onions were like year round. And so every single
right.
morning I remember my dad would go and get some vegetables. He would have this little bag and he would go out. And these guys would set up shop on the side of the road or on the crosswalk, what we call footpath, in India, and you just go, you look at multiple guys with the same, you know, with the same stuff, and oftentimes, like my dad, he would know, like, this guy, he sits here, he would know them by their name, and he knows, like, oh, this guy's stuff is usually much better.
Okay. Do you negotiate with them? Or are you like, oh, I'll pay you that much for that amount, and are you kidding me? Are you trying to rip me off?
Pretty much. Haggling is, I mean, to not haggle in India is to not know how to buy stuff.
Does that extend to everything, or just the local farmer's food? Or do you also haggle if you're buying a TV in a giant, you know, electronics store?
Oh, yes, of course. Oh, okay. Even now, I mean, unless you are going to like a shopping mall and just buying like regular stuff, you know, which is scanned and entered into a machine and whatnot, there, of course, you cannot haggle. But even now, for most things in India, if you're going to buy a refrigerator or whatever, you do expect to haggle, and you can get significant discounts just because, you know, that is what is expected. You know, no one expects to pay the MSRP, the MAC, or the what we call in India the MRP. Haggling was very much.
I cannot do. Impossible for me. I would try and be so weak and dumb that I would probably end up paying more than the MSRP.
I was not good at that myself. I could never haggle as hard as my dad. I mean, he would use all sorts of, like, you know, different tactics to get the rate down. He would also see, like, if what he's buying is really good, this guy has really good potatoes today. Hmm. Okay, he wouldn't haggle so much because he knows that, okay, he has good products. Okay, worth the little extra money.
Worth the price. Yeah.
So
you mentioned after second lunch, which sounds wonderful, you go and watch TV and you watch some kind of soap opera or, you know, something that's on. I mean, we all know that at least the movies production in India is really significant, but I'm sure that it's the same on TV, and you have a lot of pop culture that a growing teenager would be super excited about. But I would like to ask you, first of all, how was it? What type of, you know, shows or things you would love and kids your age would love? And also, how big, if at all, was Western culture for you as you were growing up? You know, American culture, I think it's probably going to be the main one. But
Definitely. Before liberalization, which started in 1991, we didn't have cable TV. So all we had was the nationally run, government run TV. It was called Doordarshan, which literally means televiewing. And we would have two channels, or maybe three, depending on the region. One would be a national channel, DD1. DD2 was the metro channel. And there were other regional channels which had programming in that region's language. So those channels would only be available. Different states would have their own regional channels as well, which had programs and, you know, TV shows and everything in their own language.
That's funny. That's what we had until the 80s in France as well. It was basically three channels, two main ones and one regional, which had many different local channels. But all right. So until then, it was all Indian shows.
We did get stuff like Star Trek and the original Star Trek, but I remember watching it in the 80s, and I remember watching.
The local channel. I mean, the Indian channels would buy the rights to the Star Trek TV show and show it on TV, like, dubbed or subbed, or...
I remember that it came on in English, but my memory is so vague that it may have been dubbed. Mm-hmm.
Did you learn English in school? I guess you did, but...
Oh, yeah. No, in India, English is a language taught like any other language from the beginning. From like the first grade, you will learn English.
So you learn Hindi at home and then English at school.
No, you would also have language lessons in Hindi, and depending on the region, like let's say in the southern India, in the state of Tamil Nadu, they would learn a Tamil in school as well. Hmm. And digressing back to education a little bit, the medium of education, what we call in India, which is basically the language in which you are taught the rest of the subjects, that was also different. So in the north, you can have a Hindi medium school where the subjects are taught in Hindi, the language of communication is Hindi. The textbooks are in Hindi, like the science textbooks or the geography textbooks or whatever. And you can have English medium schools where the language to be taught in is English. Mm. So so my school kind of was nice in the way that up to the sixth grade, the medium of teaching was Hindi, and then from sixth grade onward, it switched to English.
Okay, so every lesson would be in English from that point on.
Yeah, mm. Yeah. The textbooks and everything. Well, this sort of switch is not common. Usually, schools are like either completely Hindi medium or completely English medium. But my school kind of did this nice thing, which allowed children who are younger, you know, they don't know English that well. You know, they're still learning.
Right.
So I'm kind of grateful for that, mm-hmm. honestly. But yeah. So, and again, regionally it is different. Like it, you know. We have different education boards for each state, and it's a whole complex mess.
So do you have different languages in different region of the country, which means in the end, when people from those regions meet, they end up speaking English, or is Hindi everywhere?
No, Hindi is definitely not everywhere. Locally each region speaks their own language, but the most, what we call the official language of India, which means for official communications, is English and Hindi. For administration, it is English and Hindi. But obviously, no one uses Hindi as much because to communicate with the whole of India, you would prefer English.
Right. And, so it's normal for people, for Indians together to meet, and if they don't speak the same local language, not everyone knows Hindi, I guess, is where I'm getting to, and so they're just going to speak English between them.
Yeah, and if they do not, I mean, just because you learn English in school doesn't mean you know it, you know, you can speak it well, or you can, right. You know, it's so, because it's a second language for most people. It is, you know, when people travel, they just have to sort of get by. Like if I had to go to southern India, if I'm just visiting, I'll somehow get by because they might understand Hindi a little bit, and if I'm living long term, then I would probably, it'll be a good idea to learn some local words, some local phrases, right. In the local language. Hmm.
All right, let's get back to Star Trek for a second.
Sure.
So you mentioned you would be watching it in the 80s even. Continuing on that question of, you know, pop culture and what kind of things did you like when you were a teenager and what teenagers of your age liked?
Yeah. The Indian film industry, or at least I should say the Hindi film industry, as well as the other local regional film industries, are very, very popular in India. They have enormous number of fans. And you know, people follow like people have their own favorite actors and whatnot, which like you know they just like any other place, and as well as music. So in India, I'm pretty sure people have this image of an Indian movie which has people randomly break into song and dance.
Right, of course, yeah.
That is actually true. Especially in the 80s and whatnot, it was very true. And a lot of the popular music in India, what's called, what we can call pop, would be the film or the movie soundtrack. The soundtrack is released ahead of the movie's release, and the songs become popular, so the pop music, a huge chunk of it comes from the movies themselves. And of course, you also have pop singers and whatnot. But this is a significant difference from the Western pop scene. And definitely Western. Sorry, go ahead.
No, just before going to the Western thing, again, stupid question. I'm not sure there's even a reason, but I'm tempted to ask why are basically musicals so popular in India. Maybe it's like asking why are action movies so popular in the US? Like, why do they always have gun battles or superheroes? Although for superheroes, I guess it can be explained because of the popularity of comic books in the 70s and 80s, and the people who grew up reading those are now excited about seeing them on the big screen. So there could be an explanation. But is there an explanation for the fact that most movies from India seem to be musicals? Or is it just, that's the way it is and that's it?
I'm not sure exactly, because part of my thinking is the reason there are so many music numbers and whatnot is because Indian movies, especially some of the more what we call masala movies in India, which are like the popular movies, they tend to have a little bit of everything. They will have action, they will have romance, they will have this very sort of stereotypical villain and a very stereotypical hero and a stereotypical heroine. And there'll also be some family drama going on. So they try to appeal to a very sort of broad audience, and somehow musical numbers have become an integral part. I don't know if there is any point in time we can pinpoint this is when they started to become popular, but Indian cinema, from the very beginning, Indian cinema is pretty old. I think Indian cinema started in 1920s. Mm-hmm. So as far as I remember, all the old movies I've seen, even the movies from 50s, they have songs and dances. I mean, the format changes, the dance moves change, often the tone and the message of the songs change. But they do have these certain musical numbers and whatnot. Almost, but now it is changing. A lot more movies are integrating, instead of like the hero and the heroine breaking off randomly in the middle. They are doing less of that, and the songs are integrated much more into the story, and it's a lot more. It doesn't feel like it doesn't jar you they were talking about this and suddenly there's a song and dance. The song or whatever is integrated
part of the script,
and it will move the story forward. Right. So a lot more movies are doing that, but still those songs and those dance numbers are, they are extremely popular.
So do you have movies that girls or guys like more? Is there going to be the romantic comedy type of musical and the more action type musical? And when the girlfriend says, "Oh, I want to go see that thing," like the super stereotypical, ridiculous American image of the girl going to see, wanting to see the romantic comedy, the guy going like, oh, no, I want to see the guns explosion movie.
I'm sure there is some of that, but I don't ever remember thinking, oh, this is a kind of movie I don't want to watch. Or okay. I mean, I don't remember having those stereotypical sort of thoughts. Like, oh, this is a chick flick. I don't want to see that. Right. I don't remember having that because, again, the format of the movies was a lot more inclusive. Mm. So I mean, we do have
everything for everyone.
And definitely there would be movies which were pure comedy, like from start to beginning, they are focused a lot more on comedy, or you have movies which are focused a lot more on drama or tragedy or whatnot. Mm. But me personally, of course, I cannot speak for many Indians, but for me personally, it's either a good movie or a bad movie. It doesn't matter, you know, if it is a comedy or a tragedy or if it is an action or whatever. Okay. So for me, it's either a good film or a bad film.
All right. So let's get back to the Western culture part of it. Was it present? Was it popular? What did you think?
Before liberalization, it was not. I mean, it certainly was popular among, you know, the more affluent, the more elite people who could afford to leave India or encounter Western culture. But it became Western pop music, or Western music in general became a lot more popular and common as 90s progressed. I do remember listening. I do remember hearing names like Bon Jovi or, you know, Led Zeppelin, mm-hmm. or all these. Even though I wasn't familiar with their music, my classmates were, and that alone, I mean, I think says that, yeah, it did become more popular among more people. But even now, I would say it is Western pop influence and culture is more restricted to like the middle class and the upper, like the more affluent class. So yeah, I mean, and of course, Western shows, Western films became a lot more common as liberalization progressed and people had more access to these things.
Did you watch Friends on TV in the 90s or?
I didn't, because my parents refused to get cable TV. Okay. because they said, you will not focus on your studies. You will just watch TV all day. No cable TV until you have graduated from high school. Okay. So yeah, but I do remember like my classmates in like when I was in eighth or ninth grade, they were talking about, oh, The Bold and the Beautiful and, you know, all those kind of soap opera, like American soap operas. And I was like, huh, what is that? Bold and Beautiful sounds weird, but okay.
When you watch these things on TV, and, you know, I'm thinking about Friends because it was a very, very popular in France at the time, but I'm sure it's the same with the others. Like, the lifestyle that is portrayed on those shows is incredibly different from the one you have in your daily life. And, you know, it would be the same that was part of why we enjoyed, for example, I'm speaking for myself, Japanese pop culture in the 90s in France, because it was so different. I wonder how you guys approached it. Or was it just, oh, well, that's how the Americans live, or, you know, whatever, we don't care, or it's fascinating, or it's, you know, did it have a weight and importance, or was it just that thing that the Americans are doing?
I personally didn't watch a lot of American TV. I do remember watching some films.
Well, you watched Star Trek. You mentioned Star Trek was the first one that came to your mind. I guess it's not very typical American, American lifestyle.
Definitely. I remember watching Star Trek. I remember watching Knight Rider. It was. We got everything like 10 or 20 years later because I guess the rights were cheap enough. So yeah, definitely it did feel like a whole different world to me. It did feel like, oh, everything is so clean. everything is so fancy. Everything, the lifestyle looked a lot more glamorous than what we had in India, which of course is not true anymore. I mean, you know, I've been living here for so long. I know it's, things are a lot closer than, you know, than I thought. But especially,
That's really interesting. So when you said you wondered, oh, wow, everything is so clean, and now you realize it's probably not as clean as I thought it was. Can you expand on this? Can you explain what you thought was clean and what you think now was maybe movie magic?
Well, I just have these vague memories of watching, like, oh, you know, like in Knight Rider, he's driving his whatever AI car, and you know, like everything is, you know, like roads are, you know, so orderly, and you know, there is no litter on the streets, you know, there are no stains on the sidewalks, and it was like, wow, this is much better compared to what we see in daily life.
And now you don't think that anymore. You've been living in Utah, I believe.
Yeah, well, Utah is still a lot more, it is still much closer to that ideal that I've seen. But because Utah in general is much cleaner. But like I've seen Boston, I've seen New York, and it is not as, there are certainly like ugly parts to those places. There are certainly, parts which, you know, which completely turn upside down what people even now in India think of the US.
Okay. Talking about ugly parts, I noticed you never mentioned anything about the caste system, or even about, you know, the place of women in society and things like that. Is that not a factor, or is it a factor? Can you tell us a little bit? Because obviously we have a very specific image about the class system and all of this. Was it part of your society growing up?
Definitely, that is a factor. I wouldn't say, oh, caste system doesn't exist anymore, or the problem, the social problems don't exist anymore. They are definitely there. But things have improved quite a bit from, you know, the time of independence. Caste system is a lot less influential. Of course, it still comes into play every so often. But I would say it is being increasingly replaced by the class system, where you have the affluent and the affluent and middle class, and then, you know, the poor, the sort of the less well-to-do, and the caste system is increasingly getting more and more replaced. I mean, when it comes time to, you know, to marry someone or whatever, especially in an arranged marriage, that definitely is a factor. The caste system, like the person has to be your caste and from your region, and I mean, there are a lot of factors. But daily life, it is not such a thing anymore. Like if I go to a restaurant or whatever, it won't matter who is cooking my food, because back in the 50s, 60s, it used to be like, oh, you know, what were like the untouchable or the lower caste, they shouldn't have, you know, touch your food. It used to be so bad back, you know, like early 1900s or before that, like, they were not allowed to drink from the same well.
Okay.
So it was a lot worse. And I'm sure in rural parts of India, it is still, a big factor, but especially in urban parts, it's less of a thing now. I mean, you don't think as much about these things.
So it's still a factor when you're talking about marriage and things like that. But in the 80s or 90s, what you're saying is, it might have even been a factor when you're at that time about the restaurant thing. That was not in the beginning of the century.
It wasn't back in 80s and 90s. No, it wasn't. I don't ever remember like my parents thinking, oh, this restaurant should have only, like, you know, some Brahmin cooking the food. No, that wasn't a factor or anything.
Okay, all right. So it was earlier in the century that it was a concern.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and
You've been talking a lot about the liberalization. You've mentioned it a few times already. Can you tell us a little bit more about what it was exactly and in what ways it changed the country?
So India was, before 1991, India was a sort of a social, was a mixed economy, you can say. You had your private enterprise, but you also had government owned companies or government run enterprises, and you know, it had a lot more socialist look to it, the political system as well as the economic system. And consequently, you know, things came to a point in the 80s that Indian economy was in extremely dire straits. Just things were becoming bad, going from bad to worse. And in 1991, a plan of liberalization was devised. And you know, loans were taken from other governments to basically change the Indian economy and make it more capitalistic, okay, with less government influence and ownership of corporations.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And also they started a sort of a drive to reduce the red tapeism and the bureaucracy. I mean, all that stuff is still there, but it was a lot worse back then.
And how did it change the country? Was like all of a sudden within 2 years things were completely different, or
not at all. It was very gradual. But things didn't change that much. Slowly and surely, you know, certain rules and regulations were loosened a little bit. Private companies were allowed to do certain things which they were not allowed to do before. FDI, foreign direct investment, was encouraged in certain sectors, and over time the sectors in which foreign companies could invest was also increased. So I remember in the 90s, before 90s, I don't ever remember drinking Coke, because Coke had been basically thrown out of India in, I think, 60s or 70s. I remember drinking all the Indian brands. There was something called Campa Cola, which doesn't exist. There was something called Thumbs Up, which does exist, owned by Coca-Cola. There was something called Limca, which still exists, but now owned by Coca-Cola.
Wow. Okay.
So most of these brands are either now dead or owned by Coke or Pepsi. So similarly, I mean, this is just, you know, soft drinks, but similarly, I remember the only there were three car companies. One was Hindustan Motors, which made a car called the Ambassador and a couple others. There was another company called Premier, which had licensed this old, it had licensed in 60s or 70s, this old Fiat design, which they continued to use, forever and like 80s. And then you had a partnership with Suzuki, which was a company called Maruti Suzuki, and they made 2-3 cars, which were actually, you know, much more fuel efficient and nicer and all that.
Okay.
So, but as 90s progressed, eventually, foreign car manufacturers were allowed in, were allowed to sell their cars. Fiat came back, Maruti. Suzuki, which is Suzuki, bought out the Suzuki bought more shares and made itself the dominant partner. Right. They started bringing more models, so things like that. And now, I mean, now for like the past 10 years, I can't imagine a brand, an American or a Japanese brand, which doesn't sell in India.
Right. So you can
German. I mean, I think even Peugeot or one of the other like even Renault? French yeah. brands. No. But Citroën.
Well, that's the three we have. But
I do have this vague memory of like them partnering with Indian companies, and we do and Indian car manufacturers also came up. Mm. Like there's a very popular company in India called Tata. It's a group which is huge. I mean, they own Tata Steel. They own a bunch of different companies like that.
I think Tata is one of the most well-known companies worldwide. I mean, most people probably have heard about Tata from India, but
And they used to make trucks, but then they in 90s they started producing cars. And another company, Mahindra, came up with its own like SUVs and whatnot. So these things you started to see changes. Cable TV came on, and you could get a lot of the Americans pop stuff and you know Indian TV exploded with the private channels. Mm. So changes were not all of a sudden. It wasn't like Russia where it just burst and there were like these massive changes. The changes were a lot more gradual.
Mm. But now it's you have all the products available, I guess, if you're rich enough for the country, but you have all the products available there that you have everywhere else in the world, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah. You can. Mm. And in fact, it is quite funny because, like here in the US, if you want to purchase a car, like if I go to Honda, you have Honda Civic and, you know, whatever. Like you have these certain models. In India, the number of models that Honda sells is a lot more.
Right.
And that goes for every consumer product. Well, I shouldn't say every consumer product, but it's a lot more. The product line is a lot more diverse because now they have a price point for every kind of consumer. So if someone wants to spend only let's say if someone wants to spend only what do you call it? I'm trying to convert from the Indian numerical system to English. So if someone wants to spend only like 700,000 rupees on a car, they have a price point for that. If right. they're willing to go up to 9,000, they have a price point for that. So the diversity in product line is a lot more than what I see here in everything.
And that's probably because the diversity, I mean, the range of social statuses or richness is much wider in India than it is in the US, at least.
Definitely.
So there's I want to talk about rural India a little bit, and I mean, I'm sure you don't know it as well as urban India, but you did mention in our communication earlier the changes that smartphone technology and things like that have brought, and the web and all of this. And I'm sure we know that story from every country that didn't have computers in every home. My aunt actually works she has a humanitarian organization that works with a specific village in the Himalayas. And she was telling me that the first time she went there a few years ago, she just, you know, went to India one day and ended up there, and they didn't have, well, they still don't have a lot of electricity, but they didn't have smartphones, obviously. And now they're starting to get them even in that very remote mountain that is, you know, days away from a city. And they're starting to get that kind of connection. That must obviously transformed the entire country. Is there anything that you would, you know, want to mention about this?
Oh, definitely. The internet and the web services and this communication revolution, to put it sort of a, you know, mildly, has impacted India hugely. I remember like cell phones came a little later to India, but like in 2000s, they became increasingly very common. And I remember speaking to my folks, and even like the day laborers who, you know, who have come from villages, you know, from like rural parts of India, they would, you know, oftentimes they would come to the city and, you know, live here for a few years because they need work. And I mean, these people are poor. I mean, when you say poor in the US, you imagine someone living in like a poor place, or but they still have, you know, some government assistance, and, you know, they would be able to, you know, eat normal food more or less, or, you know, have some entertainment. Mm. When we say poor in India, you can talk about people who are so poor they don't know where their next meal is going to come from, or they are, you know, they don't, you know, they, you know, they are living in sort of very, very harsh conditions. But even they, you know, it became so cheap. And so, I mean, like I said, you know, again, it's about the price point. You have something available for every price point. They would get together. They would have their own groups. So they would pool together some money and buy just one phone with a certain number of minutes and whatnot. So they can all use it to contact their families, speak to them, you know, once a week or once a month. And I mean, these are people who are, you know, who have to live day by day. But even they were able to afford that in like mid-2000s. And now, again, with the smartphone, it's a whole new thing. And of course, smartphone hasn't penetrated that strata that deeply yet, because, you know, you need to buy a smartphone, which is generally a little more expensive than a cellular phone, and you have to pay for data. But smartphone again is beginning to penetrate deeply, and I think the best way to show how deeply it has penetrated, WhatsApp if you have a smartphone in India, you have WhatsApp on there, and you communicate. I remember, like, when I went a few years back, on billboards on the side of the road, you like whether it is some political ad or anything, many times I would see it would say WhatsApp number, and it would have a number. Like so, you can contact. I mean, WhatsApp is being used not just for one-on-one communication or group communication. It's people are using it
as a broadcast medium. You mean?
Yeah, or like if you want to communicate with someone, even if you don't know them, you can send them a WhatsApp, and they will reply back and whatnot. And in fact, WhatsApp first made its product free in India. Just because they knew that the market penetration was pretty good, and they wanted to make it even more affordable, so they made it free, and all you need is data. And I mean, this is another sign, I would say, of WhatsApp status. I'm in a couple of groups on WhatsApp, and like family groups, and I see every single day, do you remember, like, in like with email we used to get like forward. Like, you know, some aunt or uncle is forwarding something,
right,
you know,
right.
A joke or whatever, some other hoax or whatever. I get that now on WhatsApp.
Okay. And they don't use email. They use WhatsApp for communication.
Especially with like the older generation. They they can't be bothered with email. I think it's too much of a learning curve. But WhatsApp, yeah. There you go.
We were talking about Thailand in a previous episode, and we were talking about the fact that it was also being used, you know, text medium was also being used for commerce and things like that. Is that also the case in India, or do they use more quote-unquote complex webs like apps and the web itself, or does it also go through chat apps?
I am not sure if people are using chat apps to send money, but I do know that you can transfer money from one bank account to another using your normal cellular phone, and you can get money transferred within minutes from one person to another, and my dad was a little surprised. He's like, "You can't do that in the US?" I'm like, no, they say you have to use some app or something, and even then, transferring money used to take, like they said, wait 24 hours.
Yeah.
So he was like, "That is unbelievable." He was a little shocked because the image of US is always, oh yeah, they are the most technically advanced and whatnot.
Of course, yeah. All right, so we're getting close to the end of the show. I want to ask two more things. First, very quickly, how would you describe the political and social climate in India today? We've talked a lot about, you know, the 80s, 90s, and even early 2000s. How would you describe the political climate now?
Political climate, India, you know, like I said, you know, it is a union of many different cultures and So up until, I think, the 70s, early 80s, there was a dominant party, the Indian National Congress, and there were some other smaller parties and regional parties. That sort of dominance was broken in the 80s and later on in the 90s. And now, for the past few decades, we have a very thriving regional political sort of system, and you more often than not, when it comes time for the federal sort of the union elections, we more often than not end up with a coalition government, and we have the same parliamentary sort of system as Britain. I mean, there are some differences, of course, but you know, you have parties, and you know, they have candidates which they put up for prime ministerial position, and
it's stable, you know, people care about the political life. Like, do they vote? How do you even make 1.2 billion people vote in an election?
Yeah, election process is very involved. In India, it is complex, but you know, people vote. People want to make their voice heard. Unlike US, where you see, you know, like, oh, only 30% of people voted. I don't know what is the percentage in India, but it is people do discuss politics and people do vote quite a bit, quite enthusiastically. I mean, we would see people in villages going out to vote because you know, they want to get their voice heard, and election day is for federal elections, you get the day off. It's a
oh,
holiday.
Oh, really?
Like US,
it's a national holiday, it's a bank holiday.
Yeah, it's a holiday. You know, you go out, you vote, and it is all electronic voting.
Oh, really?
There is no And due to sort of the literacy levels, like a lot of India is still, you know, illiterate because there's, you know, just because of the structure. So each party will have their symbol, sort of their logo. And if you cannot read the name of the party, you know, you know
the logo.
You know the logo, you tap their logo and you have voted for them.
And that, go ahead.
No, I mean, the Yeah, so the election process is, of course, given the size of the population, very complex, and most often, you know, the regional parties get a lot of votes. The national parties, you know, they end up making coalitions with the powerful regional parties, and only this past election, I think one of the national parties, the BJP, they got a clear majority in the parliament. But usually that's not the case. They end up making coalitions. They end up making a lot of coalitions.
Okay. But it's stable. You describe it as stable.
Yeah, it is very stable. We are what used to be called the third world. I can't imagine. I don't know if there are many countries besides India which have never had a dictatorship or like military rule. Like, just considering our neighbors, you know, Bangladesh and Pakistan. I mean, their history has been rife with military coups and, you know, problems like that. In India, that has never been a concern that, oh, the military might take over. Okay. Military has always been strictly under civilian control. I mean, civilian... how it is in US. Military does not dictate policy.
All right.
Yeah, and of course... Sorry, go ahead.
No, please.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, corruption and all that is still a big problem in politics. And, you know, that is just how it is. It is improving a little bit, I would say. But, yeah, of course, that is a reality which we accept, we face. But otherwise, yeah, the system, the country is stable and everything.
All right. So last question I want to ask you is, when you first showed up in the U.S., you mentioned you went to the U.S. to study in 2001. You knew about the U.S., you spoke English and all of this, but were there things that surprised you still when you landed there and when you spent, you know, the first few weeks, in the U.S.? And also, were there things that, you realized about India when you went back, after living in the U.S. that you didn't realize when you were living there? So the first one, maybe, you know, what surprised you about the U.S., if anything?
I would say surprise-wise, what surprised me was the hard it was for people to pronounce my name. That was like the immediate... problem I had.
Okay.
And it has improved, but it was sort of unthinkable for me to not be able to have trouble with my name. It's phonetic, like all Indian names, they are written phonetically. So it was a little odd. Like, people would bungle my first name and my last name every single time. So that was like on a personal front, it really threw me off.
Okay.
I had to explain how my name is pronounced, but overall, yeah, I mean, it was certainly, you know, in India, you don't see, or at least you didn't used to see the non-glamorous parts, like you have to do everything yourself. You cannot afford to have maids or servants. You know, you have to cook everything yourself. You have to clean everything yourself. You have to do your own.
You mentioned servants earlier. I wanted to ask you about, but in the interest of time, I didn't. But since you bring it up again, did you guys in the middle class, middle class family, did you guys have maids or servants? Is that a common thing?
Yeah, it is fairly common to have maids or servants. My family didn't have them. Sometimes my mom would hire for like certain period of time. She would hire a maid to clean the dishes, but my family was a little more unusual in that way, but it is fairly common to have maids and servants.
Okay. And so when you arrived in the US, you were like, what do you mean I have to wash my own clothes? Isn't there someone I can hire?
the thought process wasn't exactly that.
Right.
It was more of a we didn't see this part.
Okay.
I mean, it was not a problem. It was not. I mean, for some people, I'm sure it is, but for me personally, it was not. But it was certainly a revelation. Like, oh yeah, you know, all those people who are living the glamorous lifestyle, yeah, they are not showing everything.
Right. So the David Hasselhoff in Knight Rider, you didn't realize that he didn't have maids and. Right.
Yeah, or like the group in Friends, you know, they're in the coffee shop all day. No one has time for that. I mean, people are busy. They are busy with their school. And oh yeah, one more thing I would like to say. In India, students usually do not, college students or even high school students, they do not work. They do not have part-time jobs.
Oh, really?
That is another thing which sort of surprised me. That almost everyone, you know, they have a part-time job or even a full-time job, and you know they are using that to pay for their university. In India, that's very uncommon, especially in the middle class. It is not common at all.
Mm. Socialism, I tell you, so many things. Right. And to be fair, even about Friends, everyone was laughing at Friends. I guess for us in the Western world, we knew that it was ridiculous that they spent so much time in the coffee shop. But for you guys, you apparently maybe you thought, oh, never really noticed, but it was like, oh, yeah, that's how they live. Okay.
Everything is, yeah.
I know you need to leave very soon, but last question. Was there anything that you realized after having lived in the U.S. going back to India that surprised you or, you know, you didn't know this before? When you went
back?
I'm
sure many people notice many different things. But for me, one of the first things I remember, so I came to the U.S. in 2001. I went back. India for a visit in 2003, and one of the things I remember noticing immediately as I got down, as I traveled back home, was the difference in air quality. I mean, when I came here, I did notice, oh yeah, air feels much cleaner, but when I went back, it was a much bigger shock that how much more polluted the air of Delhi is. I mean, there are parts of India which are very nice, and you know you don't have that much air pollution and whatnot. But Delhi, you know, when I grew up, it was just part of life. Like, oh, you know, you have all this smog in the winter, and you have, you know, all this dust and pollution all year round. But the stark difference sort of made me realize, wow, I have been living. I've been breathing air which is a lot better than what I had in India.
Right.
I could probably think of other things, but that was something that immediately. I mean, the night I landed, I went home, and just even during that sort of journey, like the half an hour, I could feel the difference. I could before I went to sleep, you know, I did my, like, you know, the ablutions, and I could see, like, oh my God, so much difference.
Is it still the case nowadays? Is it as polluted still?
Oh yeah, Delhi, I mean, they made huge improvements in the 90s. They, all the buses, I mean, since Delhi is such a big metropolis, there are so many buses and so many like public transportation vehicles of other sorts which they used to use, you know, diesel or diesel or petrol, or what they call gasoline in US.
Right.
So they were switched in Delhi, at least. I'm sure other cities had it happen in their own schedule, but they switched them with, I think, mid-90s or late-90s, they switched them to CNG. It was the decision by Delhi High Court or something. They ruled all these vehicles, all these public transport vehicles, have to switch to CNG within by this date. Mm. And if not, they would. So there was this huge sea change you know, like all the buses went from diesel to CNG. And yes, it did affect air quality a little bit, but the reason it has gotten worse is
more
just because of
cars.
Not just cars. I mean, Delhi as by itself has grown a lot since '80s and '90s. I mean, it was a big metropolis before. Now it is even huger, and there are a lot more people, and there is a lot more industry and everything, even more than it was before. And so, just overall concentration of people and objects and like vehicles, it has, or industry has, you know, made it worse.
All right. Well, I think this is going to be the end of the show for us. Obviously, thank you so much for taking us on this wonderful trip in India from the 80s to today. Do you have anything online that you want to point people to if they, you know, pimp anything or anything you do, or nothing at all? Your choice.
No, I'm not really sort of a public person, but I do. I do follow you, of course, and and Scott Johnson and some other people. I don't have a lot of online presence, as it were.
Okay, no problem. Well, you know what? If anyone in the audience has any comments or questions, you can always go to frenchspin.com on the episode's show notes and ask your questions there or comment. You know, we're very happy to read everything you have to say. If you want to follow me, you can do so at NotPatrick on Twitter or on Facebook. And if you want to leave a comment on iTunes, you're welcome to do that as well. It obviously is very helpful when we have people leaving 5-star reviews and comments for the show. So go to iTunes in your region and leave a comment. That would be absolutely awesome. And even awesomer would be to go to Patreon and support the show financially. You know that patreon.com/thephileasclub is where you can go to support the show. You can tell us and show us that you appreciate what we do. If it brings a little bit of interesting knowledge in your life, if you think it's a nice thing to have and that you would be sad if it went away, well, it's not going away, but still, you could forego one cup of coffee and give me that money instead. That would be amazing and help us keep doing the show. So you can do that at patreon.com/thephileasclub. Very easy. You can stop whenever you want. And you can do that in 2 minutes flat on the website. So check it out if you're interested. And of course, again, thank you so much, Mayank, for being on the show. It was enlightening for me. It was super interesting, so much so that I went over the hard limit that you said you had, and I apologize. But thank you so much.
No, it is completely fine. Completely fine. Thank you so much, Patrick, for this opportunity. This was great.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you liked it. Thanks for being here again, and we'll talk to the listeners again in a couple of weeks. Talk to you then. Bye.
So what I want to communicate, which I've seen in a lot of what I've heard from a lot of people, when they say India, they think India is a monolithic culture or country. You know, they don't realize that it is in a way many countries, and each region, you know, has their own language, their own cuisine, which they are fiercely proud of, and so when people say, you know, say something in Indian, I'm like, what is that? I don't know what you mean. I can speak my language, the one I grew up with, sure, but I can't speak for the rest of India. No.
So, in that sense, the federation is it's really a federation, and you mentioned the analogy you made with the European Union Are the differences as stark, would you say?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the only one of the big differences, of course, you know, European Union is voluntary, and you can leave, like how Britain is leaving.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
but in India, yeah, that would not be possible without some severe military action.
Right, of course.
Like how EU has you know, Germany, Britain, France, Portugal, Spain, all these countries, and they have stark differences in their language, food, and within these countries there are a lot of differences. It is the same in India, different states have their own culture and everything, and within those states also there is a lot of diversity. Yeah, it is pretty much like European Union. We have, you know, one currency, one army, and, you know, of course you don't need a visa to travel within the country or own anything. You can move from one place to the other. So it is very much like that. So we are Indians, but I mean, we do have that national identity, but we also have a very strong regional identity.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.